Blog Talk Radio.
As the legend goes, an old Cherokee was teaching his grandson about life. He said to the boy, "A fight is going on inside me. It is a terrible fight, and it is between two wolves. One is evil. He is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, guilt, lies, superiority, and ego. The other is good. He is joy, peace, love, hope, humility, kindness, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. The same fight is going on inside you, and inside every other person too." The grandson thought about it for a minute, and then he asked his grandfather, "Which wolf will win?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "The one you feed."
Good evening, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Bienvenidos. Que tal? Okay. Namaste. And what's up? Welcome to another edition, another show, another episode of the Greenhouse Effect. I'm your host, Bill Green, hoping that you can hear me okay out there. I trust that you can. If not, I'm sure I got my man on the scene to let me know right away. Nope, can't hear you. Okay. I'm going to keep rolling as if you can. Will is not going to be here tonight. He's on the road with his family, with his mom, Belinda, and lady friend, Sue, somewhere between Memphis and Chicago. And we would greatly appreciate it if, in fact, you all extend your prayers for their safe return. And for his safe return on Wednesday. I had enough of this soloing. And I do a pop thanks, Adam. And I do apologize for that glitch, you know. I'm still learning, you know. Anyway, yeah, what the heck. I'm sure that the millions of you out there will forgive me. So a quick little rundown of what Will does so flawlessly in regards to the due diligence. As most of you have heard already, the idea, of course, is to have a pen, pad, piece of paper, envelope, or my favorite, a napkin nearby. So in the event you may want to take notes, either from something you hear or from something you may want to throw out here to us through the chat room, please feel free to do so. Now, the chat room is open. As I already said, my man Adam is already manning the controls there. The chat room is somewhat exclusive in that in order to be able to enter it, you have to have Block Talk Radio membership. And the way to get Block Talk Radio membership is to go to blocktalkradio.com. And in it, you'll find the Greenhouse Effect, and there you can sign up. Now, they're going to ask for credit card information. They don't charge anything. We've been doing this for over 2.5 years, and no one has ever been charged. But it does give you the opportunity when you sign up for membership, both to come into the chat room to share any comments you may want to, and also in the event that you may want to start your own podcast radio show, where it's just you and someone else is free, but if you should have three or more, there's a fee. So, you know, it's there for you to consider, but definitely we'd appreciate it if you signed up, if for no other reason, to join the chat room. Also, for those of you who may be listening on Facebook online, you need to know that I still haven't learned how to check your comments if you should make any online. Will be back Wednesday, so you can cuss me out then. But you can't tonight, too. It just won't do any good because I won't know anything about it. And so I think that pretty much covers it. In the event that you should want to dial in, if you're on the chat room, our number here is 516-453-6094. And please feel free to call us. We would love to hear from you. Absolutely. No question about it. Okay. Hopefully that went across okay. One other thing I want to mention, if in fact you should want to make any comments here on the online, please be sure to hit number one on your keypad. That will let us know, and I see there's already somebody queued in, that will let us know that you do want to in fact come on the show and make a comment. And we'll be getting to that part of the show soon, hopefully. Sometimes, so you know me, why use 100 words when 1,000 words will do? I'll really try hard, however, to monitor myself and leave room for opening the line for comments. I, as some of you who have listened to the shows previously, especially last week, already know, my nephew Ray, who's been on the show often, got married last Thursday. It was truly a gala affair, y'all, with something for everyone to enjoy. I think it would be accurate to say that at least four generations were represented: blood family, step family, extended family, in-laws, great and grandparents, uncles, aunts, brothers, sisters, cousins, and friends. Since Thursday, since the event itself, I've been reflecting on the many different feelings and emotions that were stirred. You know, as some of you know, I've been married and divorced twice. My first ex, in fact, was there. She was my plus one, you know, as was my oldest son, Will, which he was in. He was also in the wedding party itself. My sister-in-law, Brenda, my brother Mick's wife, and my great niece, which meant, of course, great nieces and nephews were there as well. Representatives of various racial and cultural identities, waiters, waitresses, and MC rapper Dougie Fresh was there. There were DJs, photographers, coordinators, and I'm betting some volunteers. There was a saxophone dude who blew out my ears, as did most sound effects. I had nephews there, great nephews, and a great niece, all of which participated in the ceremony as well. In regards to the noise, at one point I was reduced to stuffing Kleenex in my ears. Gee, can you believe it? anyway, the food was great. You know, I hated the singing assignment only because I had wished that my Belinda, Will's mom, you know, had been seated closer to family that she hadn't seen in a long time. You know, we all kind of came up in young adulthood together. So especially my sister-in-law, you know, and Belinda are, you know, good friends. It would have been nice if they had been seated next to each other. And, you know, that would have gave me time to creep. Not that she would have cared. But, you know, my conscience was still working on me. I'm just playing. Some of the music was familiar, believe it or not, but I grumbled some, smiled often, and tried as best I could to pretend I could hear what others were saying to me. With or without the Kleenex in my ears, by the way, you know, there was more than one occasion when I would pull a plug out just to lean over, but I still couldn't hear, you know. Anyway, I met many who I didn't know, some I didn't recognize at first, and it was great to be able to reconnect, you know. Well, not reconnect, but to connect voices to faces. There were people I had known by voice only and seeing, like mainly on my prayer line, you know, and then meeting them at the event was great to be able to attach the face to the voice. It was an all white affair, and my original outfit that I purchased for the event didn't fit. You know, I'm not the kind of dude who tries things all, you know, at the store. So my hat, my cap fit, it was kind of a fake Kango kind of thing, but it was cool because it kind of looked like a cap and a kufi, and it fit great, you know. And my shoes, the white shoes fit. Probably the only time I get a chance to wear, you know, the pants weren't too bad. But the shirt, well, I was fortunate that I had another one on standby. All the things that didn't fit, I was able to return successfully. You know, yet in the end, I just felt old, outdated, a relic from a forgotten era. I felt as though time had just passed me by. And it took a while before I accepted that my conversations with others sounded like I was complaining. I really wasn't. I was just, you know, in my curmudgeon kind of state of mind, I was just making comments that were more about me than about the event itself. But I sounded like that dude who sits on his porch and says, "Get off my lawn." So anyway, all that said, it brings me to the topic of tonight's show, which is family, the generational influence on behaviors, beliefs, rules, themes, and values. And there are six types of families that I'll be focusing on. I'm sure there may be many that some of you are aware of, and there may be a few less that, in fact, tonight will, you know, say, "Oh, okay, I didn't know about those." But regardless, tonight I'm only going to be focusing on six. In the event that I can get through all six. If not, of course, whatever we don't finish tonight will carry over to Wednesday. If you have pen in hand and paper ready, I'm going to run through the six right quick and then come back and talk about each one. And they're not in any order, of course. They're just six types of families. The first is the nuclear family. I think I said that pretty good. The single parent family, the extended family, the childless family. Yeah, how about that? Step family. And there's one more here, the grandparent family. Actually, there is a seventh, one that I just added for my own sake, the black family. So we'll start out and back up to the nuclear family, which consists of two parents, usually married or common law, with one or more children, biological or adopted. 69% of children live in this kind of dynamic. The nuclear family you might want to think of as being that family during the nuclear age, the late 40s through the 50s, which of course has all of its roots in my orientation, but not necessarily my family dynamic. In fact, not my family dynamic. But the nuclear family system in itself had a tremendous influence on the types of TV shows we saw in the 50s and the early 60s, where you saw, well, white families early on, mom and dad, maybe three children, more than one almost always, often a pet, you know, a nice house in the suburbs and, you know, the white picket fence. And the shows were usually a half hour long. And the thing that was unique about these shows is that, first of all, the stereotypic dynamics were put in place. Dad usually showed up from work, and his doting wife was almost ready to, well, you know, for lack of a better way, you know, a better way to say it, wait on him. You know, he'd come in, you know, and take off his coat or jacket, put on a sweater, you know, never take off his tie. You know, she would hand him, or maybe even put on his slippers. He'd light up a pipe. Often there was a cocktail waiting, and she was always dressed in a dress, high heels, and pearls. That's how she spent her whole day. And the family always sat down to dinner together at the same table at the same time. And if there was any kind of conflicts or concerns at all, they were all solved within a half hour. Back in those days, there were no, you know, to be continued. There wasn't any continuous saga. The series was a half hour long, and each show had a happy conclusion. That's pretty much the theme of so many of the shows that I saw growing up. And consciously or unconsciously, that was the value system that I began to accept as being somewhat normal, with no attitude of discourse or rejection or disappointment in regards to my family as a system. But the comparative was there, you know, and for me in the 50s, you know, being an adolescent, I believed in TV. So what I saw there, though, wasn't to compare. It was just a belief that that's how people live. And so that nuclear family system, again, keep in mind, in the 50s and early 60s, television was just beginning to take off, just beginning to find, well, a home. But there was only one TV, and usually a black and white, well, not usually, black and white. You know, color TV came around in the 60s, I believe. I'm not sure. Don't ask me. I didn't discover color TV until probably the 70s. I don't know. You know, who knows? Maybe I saw something like it in a TV store, you know, in a big plate glass window. But for the most part, it was just a black and white TV, all too often a floor model. And it didn't have a remote. Well, it did have a remote. The remote was the child or children, you know, who took turns having to go change the channel, or even a remote. You know, usually had rabbit antenna, you know, and it wasn't unusual to find tinfoil, you know, wrapped around one of the ears on the aerial. And all too often, you know, we were relegated, us children were relegated to having to pick up the antenna and move it around till it was a good, no, I'm kidding. But it did, you know, it wasn't unusual that the antenna did have to be moved around in order to get a better reception. We, as children of a household like that, usually bolted. We usually, you know, we got the heck out of the crib. Because there was no democracy when it came to TV back in the 50s and 60s. Whatever the parents watched, parents or guardians or parents, whatever they watched, that's what everybody watched. You know, so if we didn't want to see it, you know, chances are we went outside and we were allowed to be out, of course, until it got dark or until the streetlights came on. Tradition, but nevertheless true, especially within the system I grew up in. So our TV was mostly spent during Saturday mornings. A lot of Westerns. Sometimes during the evening, the family shows would come on, and of course we partook in that. At that time, because of the dynamics of family, regardless of the circumstances, we usually sat and ate together. The TV was not on. It was not a part of the entertainment. And the food and conversation was an expectation. There were rarely leftovers. And if I didn't want to finish what was on my plate, my brothers had no problem with that. You know, but we never went to bed hungry. I don't want to give that impression. Well, I may have, especially if liver was being served. You know, I wasn't about no liver. You know, and sometimes my mom would take mercy on me and fix a couple hot dogs. Matter of fact, if I saw hot dogs in the pot at night, it was almost a guarantee they were about to chow down on liver. And she was the kind of mother that didn't demand or force me to eat what everybody ate most of the time. Sometimes it was, this is the best we got, so this is the best you get. But as far as the, you know, the spoiling food in the refrigerator, that wasn't happening. Matter of fact, some of the things that were commonplace with us was trimming the mold off of the white bread. more so than not, which I didn't think anything about, you know, as a child, it was normal, you know, and but it wasn't like we had moldy bread, you know. It's just the bread back in my in that time and era didn't keep like it does now. They were, the preservatives was not a regular part of it. There were plenty of bread factories, you know, around our neighborhood. You could smell the bread baking as you could smell potato chips baking in the air. You know, that was kind of cool, you know, so you could really get fresh bread right from the bakery. So the nuclear family as a system, you know, has its strengths and weaknesses, as all of these families that I'm going to go through have. You know, the strength of the nuclear family was, you know, and again, keep in mind, the nuclear family as described here and as defined here had to do with two parents, one or more children. Whether those children were biological or adopted, and whether the family was married or common law. Usually, you know, mostly defined as the typical American family, which strengths included financial stability. Children were raised in more or less a stable home because of the two parents. The emphasis was usually on health and education. And the focus was on communication. Again, we were required to be in situations that stirred dialogue. There was no MTV. There was no, you know, cell phones. There was none of the things that we have accepted as commonplace today, especially within the family, you know, which often, all too often, in fact, means that we all don't sit together and eat dinner anymore. That's pretty much a tradition that's come and gone the way of the buffalo. You know, we do it during the traditional gatherings like Thanksgiving, Easter, Christmas, maybe. And that's pretty much about it, though. Picnics and those cookouts don't count, you know. So before anybody starts saying, oh, yeah, but we would get together 4th of July, family reunions, blah, blah. Well, they don't count. Not as a traditional family setting is concerned. That was more or less a gathering for a special occasion. Now, some of the weaknesses of the nuclear family, you know, had to do with the exclusion of the extended family all too often, strange as that may sound, which as a result of that, of course, tended to promote a sense of stress born from isolation. An additional weakness of the nuclear family was that it could struggle, you know, with having to deal with a comfortable resolution to problems. I don't know about y'all, but I grew up not so much directly with my family, but with related families, you know, grandpa, uncles, and aunts, you know, where you didn't air your dirty laundry. And so all too often, the issues that happened within the family itself was kept there, was kept right in the home. And it wasn't a shared experience. So If dad ruled the family with an iron fist, then it didn't matter who he hit with that fist. You know, that stayed at home. And whenever, you know, situations of, mom, you know, taken to the belt, or, you know, other kind of issues that may, you know, arise from the family, it was resolved right there, or if not resolved, at least kept right there. So, you know, the family may show up at other gatherings or may have company by. But there was no shared dialogue about, oh, guess what, you know, Johnny did yesterday at school, and he got sent home and expelled for drinking in the bathroom. I wouldn't talk. Or, you know, it was, you know, never talked about as far as any kind of abuse. And one other thing is that all too often, as a weakness now, all too often in the nuclear family, the child or children were raised in a very child-centered kind of kind of environment, which all too often could create a sense of self-centeredness, you know, not only with the child growing up that way, but eventually with the child's own family, creating that same kind of dynamic that was only about them, you know, the me only kind of family dynamic. So that's, you know, that's kind of the nuclear family, you know, in a nutshell. And of course, there's more to it, both its strengths, its weaknesses, and weaknesses. But it gives you an idea of what the formula is all about. Now, you may wonder, well, what does it mean, you know, in terms of the exclusion of the extended family? Well, parents often shut out grandparents and other extended family members as a means of support. So it's not like they're called on to help. Instead, you know, they're not a part of solution. And I don't know if any of you are of grandparent age yet, but sometimes, you know, grandparents' advice is not welcome. And then, of course, there's the other times where grandparents can be kind of overly involved and sometimes kind of dominant, depending on, you know, how they raise their son or their daughter, and sometimes can have more of a voice, in fact, in the family structure than even the son or the daughter-in-law. Take your pick. I remember, all, you know, when I married the second time into a family already established, you know, my wife then had a child, and I was really reluctant to get too involved with someone with a child, because I wanted that sense of freedom that comes before you have children, at least that sense of it, where we could have the option of doing things together. But it wasn't like she was going to put them in a child kennel. So, you know, whatever time was spent was time spent that involved him. And he was like 6 months old. So eventually he became a part of me. I became a part of him. And they became a part of us. And us became a part of the additional family. And so it took a minute. I had to deal with the influence of her family. And because he was born, you know, out of wedlock, so to say. So her family had all rallied around her in support. So I kind of came in as, you know, the stepfather kind of guy, you know, who was, you know, it wasn't that I wasn't welcome. I was an outsider. So my influence of how I was raised, my influence of what my expectations were, even my influence of how I felt her son should be raised in our roof, was more so than not, especially initially, overruled by, you know, her family. I give you an example. There was one time when her son, our son, took a magic marker to a one of those tables, you know, that has the kind of, what is it, formica top or whatever that kind of, you know, wooden top is, and he marked it up, you know, with a magic marker, and, you know, the permanent kind. And I got on his case. I think I may have even gave him a spanking. And so his mom must have shared it with her grandfather, because a week later, a big play school, one of those play school blackboards, green blackboards, so I guess it's a green board, showed up, you know, with all the crayons and all, I mean, all the chalk and all that stuff, you know, and it wasn't like I had any voice in that. It was almost like my punishment for disciplining him. And it was that kind of thing went on, you know, quite often initially. And it really, I can't say it stopped. It just kind of faded out because, you know, my stepson, who I always referred to as my surrogate son, he didn't stay 6 months forever. So eventually he just kind of outgrew that need for that extended attention. You know, but nevertheless, it did relegate me to a second class status, so to say. And, you know, I don't know about y'all, but I think there should be, somebody told me there was, and I don't know, I haven't seen it, and so no one has ever celebrated it with me. There should be a step-parent day. You know, that's all too often a thankless job that almost always inherits that may be going on within the family that he or she was not a part of. And, you know, and that can create its own dynamics as well. But I think it should be a step-parent take. Okay, so much for that one. Moving on to number two, the single parent. You know, so that's one that kind of has a more than one meaning. You know, a single parent is one parent with one or more children, never married, widowed, or divorced. You know, and according to recent census, that type of situation or that type of circumstance is on the rise. Probably since the 60s, when there was such an increase and a steady incline of divorces. But in the 60s is when divorce rates began to increase, you know, as did births outside of wedlock. More and more, you know, I guess births outside of wedlock would suggest the female, but no mention of how many males were in fact, you know, having impregnated women, you know, as trophies, you know, when they would get pregnant and have children. So, you know, these things of single parent, you know, created its own unique challenges. I never, you know, my mother, when I was born, was married, but my mother and father broke up when I was still a preteen. And so she went from a married, you know, mother to a single parent for me and my brothers. But I never thought of her that way when I was growing up. Maybe the term wasn't one that was bantered about that often. But in talking about my family and how I grew up, not too long ago, maybe just a couple years or so, the person I was talking to said, oh, so your mother was a single parent. And it was like, wow, yeah, how about that? And what a single parent she was. Usually, single parenting produces, not, I shouldn't say usually, it can produce strong family ties, a strong bond. Often there's shared household duties, yeah, you know, because like in my case, it was my single parent was a mother. When my mom went to work, she couldn't be two places at one time. And so there were certain things after a while when she taught me how to do them, there were certain things she expected. Like she expected me to go to the laundromat and do laundry. She expected me to, in fact, take care of her mother, who we moved in with. You know, her mother was diabetic. So my mom needed me, you know, to be able to give my grandmother insulin. My mother taught me how to shop. So she would leave me money and expect me to, you know, go to the grocery store and shop accordingly and always account for every nickel. Yeah, my older brothers weren't really a part of that system too much. When my brother Jeff graduated, he went to the Air Force right after high school. And Jeff was the middle brother, and my oldest brother didn't finish high school. He dropped out, I think he was around a sophomore, and he went into the Army. So I was mama's boy. I went with my mother everywhere. I did everything with my mother. My mother taught me how to do things that I'm grateful for today. You know, I'm probably the best ironer anyone will ever meet. I can iron my ass off, excuse my language. You know, so, you know, that was one of the great advantages. There's usually also with a single parent home a strong resilience, meaning that in that kind of setting, we learn how to cope. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's something wanted or something preferred. Coping skills in that situation, you know, is pertinent to the circumstances. But that doesn't mean it's always a healthy coping skill that develops. Sometimes the coping skills also has a form of denial attached with it, you know, especially if, again, the idea is not to air your dirty laundry, this time for negative reasons, already thrust upon the family by being a single parent. My mother was the only one out of all her siblings who was, in fact, living in the circumstance of moving in with her mother, leaving her husband and raising her three children. So there was kind of a negative stigma attached to that. And I felt it more so than not. But, you know, you adapt, and, well, I adapted anyway. Some of the, I guess I could say, weaknesses was, you know, the struggle to get by. The struggle to get by was reality for me growing up. you know, I lived in the kind of neighborhood community, you know, that I have talked about often and probably will continue to, because so much of my values, you know, were further developed. You know, maybe, you know, all too often, my mother having to go to work and me being the youngest, often I was left to my own wiles to get by. But I had two sets of friends. I had the good friends, I'll call it that way, you know, on the one side of the dividing line that I'll call St. Lawrence Avenue, you know, that between St. Lawrence Avenue and Cottage Grove going east, you know, between 63rd and 61st, it created that, whatever that square footage would be, you know, of a community within a community. And so with my friends, as it was with all of us, we often, you know, took up root in each other's homes. So where my mother may have been a single parent struggling to get by, so forth and so on, you know, many of my friends had, you know, either a parent, two parents or two grandparents. And so being around them still reinforced those values, you know, that were expected within the community. And so that, you know, in many ways, they were even my surrogate parents all too often. And you live by the rules of the home. The guys liked coming over to my apartment because my mother was usually gone. My brothers were away. So, you know, we kind of had free reign in the crib. But we always respected the boundaries. And, you know, however we may have behaved when my mother wasn't around, you know, she was shown more than an ample amount of respect. And the apartment was always put back in shape before she got home. It was crazy, wasn't it? And the guys all treated her with a great deal of respect, which even to this day, you know, I truly appreciate. And I was given a lot of hand-me-down, and you know, from neighbors, from the men of the neighborhood, and sometimes even from my friends. You know, my friends who were, you know, born with a little bit more privilege. Yeah, I'm thinking of two in particular. Well, one in particular, you know, my best friend at the time, Richard, you know, whenever his Converse gym shoes, you know, developed, you know, flaws like holes at the bottom, you know, he would pass them on to me. I mean, it's not what he wanted to do. It's what I asked. And even though his feet were bigger than mine, even though they had holes in the bottom, hey, you know, they were Converses and the top looked good. So I just shoved some cardboard in them bad boys, and from the top, from the bottom on up, you know, nobody could see the underneath. I was wearing me some Converses, dude. That was prestigious back in them days, you know. I also had a nickname, Choke. And, you know, that represented the pants lengths that I would wear, you know. But we had two types of dress codes back in the 60s. It was called Ivy Leaguers and Gausters. The Ivy Leaguers wore, you know, Ivy League pants or short, single crease pants, you know, no cuff, and they were pretty much straight leg and tight fitting, and where the choke came from is that they were called ankle chokers, in that the pants were so short that they showed your ankles. Gausters, however, wore double pleated pants, cuffed, baggy, you know, and shirts to match. My hand-me-down sometimes, you know, left me with the IWWIG kind of ensemble, which meant I wore what I got. So sometimes I would have long collar shirts and Ivy League pants on. Very conflicting and contrasting dress code, but nevertheless, you know, that's how I got by. And so, you know, and as I'm sure many of you know, yeah, we could be kind of ruthless with how we would tease and rag each other, you know, growing up. But yeah, fights would sometimes, you know, occur, but fights lasted for as long as the last fist was thrown, and usually before the day was out, you know, hurt feelings were mended, and we went on about our business. We weren't really a gang. I guess by today's standards, by our very numbers, we would be considered a gang, but we just hung together. That was my good friend. Now, on the other side of St. Lawrence, that was between St. Lawrence and South Park, now called King Drive, you know, that's the group that I learned how to drink with. That's the group that I learned how to carouse with. You know, I never could go out. Well, I would sometimes go to parties with them where there would be fights. But by and large, the guys wouldn't let me hang with them when there would be any kind of gang activity going on, because they were too concerned about me getting hurt, believe it or not. So they would rather I just didn't hang with them. So that's in part, you know, the idea of what sometimes the single parent adventure could be like. Single parenting can be hard on the child when parents, you know, split up, or if the child only knows one parent. You know, so I never knew my father. I never knew him as my father. I only had two faint memories of him. One, you know, I must have been like maybe 5 or 6, and he swatted me on my butt standing out on the back landing in my underwear, you know. And the other time was a few months before he died. I was 11, and he came by and took me to the movies. And I still remember what I went to see, Invaders from Mars and the Brain Eaters. And we went to the Maryland Theater, which was only, you know, a couple blocks from where I live. So when we got back, it was in the afternoon after school, and we got back, my mother, you know, pitched a fit because she wanted to take me to get some shoes. And of course, you know, given the choice, of course I would have rather gone to get some shoes than go to the theater with my dad, you know, and watch these two monster movies. And she got mad at him, but I wasn't. And then in a few months he died, and that closed the saga on him. And then there's the third family. But before I get into the next one, which is the extended family, there's a caller in the queue, and I want to go ahead and bring him in. We're about 3/4 of the way through the show, and I know he's been on in the queue before, and I didn't get to him. So caller 708-724, I want to bring you in. And I said him, and I didn't mean him because he may be female. But hopefully you're there, and this is the Greenhouse Effect, and you are on the air.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
This is Bubbles.
I knew it was. What's up, man?
How are you?
Oh, man, how are you, man? It's too early to tell with me. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Just listening to the conversation. It's you bring
back.
Well,
now that you're on, it is a conversation. Yeah, go ahead, man.
Yeah, man, just growing up, you know, in our neighborhood was awesome experience, you know. So many
yeah,
good
really
memories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And
yes.
I was thinking about your Uncle Harry, and the first time I heard the Banana Boat song by Harry Belafonte was at your house.
isn't that amazing, man? The memories and stuff. That's right. That's right.
Right.
Banana Boat song. Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Uncle Harry. Yeah, Uncle Harry.
Harry
was an electronics whiz. Yeah, he built his own.
Exactly.
His own stereo system, yeah. Go ahead.
Right, yeah, you was shortwave radio too, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure
yep,
did.
So
and had it in the car, yeah. Yeah,
I remember that. Right,
yeah,
right.
Sure did. Man, I forgot that. Wow. You know, isn't that something how, you know, man, how memories can just birth more memories, you know, right on.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yep. Yep, there was something else you would say. Oh, about going to the show, going to the movies. You know,
yeah.
I remember
going
to we went to Maryland TV, Tivoli or the Ark.
Oh, the Ark, yeah. Because you put your popcorn at risk going to the Ark. it may be a rat, but it said, "No, nah, man, that popcorn mine."
Right, right.
Oh man.
Yeah,
man, just hearing your voice just brings back for me so many more memories, man. You know, yeah, but go ahead.
I remember all the stage shows we used to see.
Yeah, man.
You know,
that's right.
At the Tivoli and the Regal, but those were the good old days. And I remember, you remember Miriam and Eleanor on the third floor?
Of course. Yeah, they lived right above me. Yeah. Yeah, heck yeah.
Right. They,
you know, everybody fell in love with one of the other ones. Yeah.
they sure did. But another thing, you know, my brother and I were raised by our grandparents.
Right.
And
Mr. and Mrs. Bailey, yeah.
That's correct. So, and if we hadn't been raised by them, I don't know what would have happened to us. You know.
And, you know, I never even thought of them as being your grandparents until either you or Ricky told me they were your grand. It just didn't it had nothing to do with age and nothing else. It was just,
right.
Man, I mean, they were like your parents. That's how all of us
yeah,
thought.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Yeah. And
we never even said anything like, boy, they old. it just never seemed like that. It just seemed like your parents, man. Yeah,
right,
your grandma,
right.
Man, your grandma, she was amazing, man. She was amazing.
Yeah. But yeah, man, it's just good to connect with you.
William Absolutely, man.
Yeah, but
you know, thank you so much for calling in, man. And go ahead.
No, I was saying I was listening last week too, but like, you know, I didn't cue in. So I was just listening,
and
I wasn't able to communicate with you there. But I appreciate you telling the story about my brother, how you thought he was one of the best athletes in the neighborhood.
I thought he was the best athlete in the neighborhood, man. I really did.
Yeah, and
you know.
And I told him the next day what you said, and he was pretty appreciative of that. You know.
Yeah.
He was a pretty good athlete.
Yeah, and you know your brother. I mean, like, you know, like, I mean, that wasn't his forte. I mean, he was good and he was okay with being good, but, you know, he wasn't somebody to make a big deal out of it. He's like, okay, if you say I am. You know, I remember we went to Richard's funeral and I mentioned that to your brother and he just went, yeah, okay. But, you know, I love the fact that, you know, he and I always competed. You know, and man, that's the one thing that I enjoyed about the relationship with your brother. We always competed. You know, we didn't have to have anybody else around. We were fine with just each other, and we were always on the same side. You know, we always competed against everybody else. You know, and we had one fight that he don't even remember, and I grabbed him and held on for dear life, just trying to get him to calm down.
Yeah. Well, you know, when Ricky gets mad, you don't want to be around him.
Man, exactly.
Get away from him.
Man,
he's mellowed out now.
Yeah, well, you know, all I know is that I waited until he mellowed out then. It's like, man, I held on, man. We wrestled on the ground. And I just said, Ricky.
Yeah.
You know, when he calmed down, and that was it, man. But I was just, oh, no, I'll never forget that, man. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
So, you know. We could do a whole show on just that, on just the memories of how we grew up. And I wish that the youths of today, meaning adult youths, you know, like even my sons, even Will's generation, I wish they had the opportunity to grow up like we did. But then again, there was, you know, so much geographical segregation that went on that, of course, you know, like open housing wasn't open. And so we were forced to live that way, but we didn't know it. You know, we just knew what we knew based on how we lived, man. Wow.
Right. One more thing.
All right, man.
Bring up.
Go ahead. No.
Just last thing. I remember when we were kids, how we would be playing and having a good time, and your mom would come home, and you would have to stop what we were doing and go to confession.
Man, you always say that. Oh, with the confession on Saturday, man. Saturday evening. Now you make it sound like I had to go every day.
Well, no, because it was so funny because whatever we were doing, you would have to stop.
I'd have to stop.
Then,
that's right.
Then the next thing we know, you and your mom are walking towards the confession.
Walking toward Holy Cross Church,
Holy Cross, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. Yep, that was a part of the deal.
Yep.
And there wasn't no, oh my, it was like, gotta go. That's it.
Gotta go, right. Gotta go.
That was the bottom. It wasn't no complaining. It's like, that's it.
Yeah.
I'll holler at y'all later. Gotta go.
there goes Billy.
Yeah.
We'll see him later.
Yeah, heading to church. What'd you say? Heading to confession. Not even heading to church. Man, you were
right,
man.
Okay.
All righty, man. Yeah, man.
I'll talk to
stay
you
close,
later,
man. All righty. Stay all right, close.
Buddy.
Stay near.
Talk
man.
To you later.
Love you, man. All righty.
Love you too.
Yeah,
bye.
That's my old friend he said Bubbles. He was Butch, and my brother Jeff, actually, as far as I know, Butch might have a different version, but as far as I know, my brother Jeff nicknamed him Bubbles because Butch had the ability to fold his tongue in a way and blow spit bubbles. I never seen anybody do that. And I went and got my brother Jeff. I said, man, you got to see your friend. Man, you got to see this talent he had. And Jeff said, oh, wow, blowing bubbles. And he became Bubbles after that. So that's, you know, that's how the legend goes. Maybe it's, you know, born from myth, but the idea is that you find truisms in myth, not lies. You know, myths explain how, why things are the way they are, y'all. So I don't see anybody else in the queue right now. So I'll just kind of do these last few minutes and speak a little bit on the extended family. Now, the extended family probably is more familiar to us than we know. The thing about the extended family, first of all, in different cultures, it is much more common than people know. It's been around. The extended family system has been around for hundreds of years. Again, two or more adults related through blood or marriage often includes aunts, uncles, cousins, or other relatives living under the same roof. Typically, extended families live together for social or financial support. Parents may live with their children and their children's grandparents. Or some of the strengths of the extended family is respect and care for the elderly is important. Usually that's the case. I'll get into a little bit of that, you know, from another perspective. More family, of course, the extended family with all of, you know, the groups I just described, that provides more to help with chores, child care, and emergencies and so forth. And then, of course, there's always the social support. Now, one of the negatives is lack of respect can cause inner conflict for the elderly. You know, this is one of those generational themes that changes or has changed, I believe, over the years, over the discourse of generations, that where I grew up, like with Butch and I were just talking about, we grew up in a socioeconomically closed kind of circumstance. There was not open housing, no matter what government may have suggested during the 50s and early 60s. So we were confined pretty much to certain parts of Chicago. We weren't really economically impoverished. We probably, in retrospect, lived a middle class, maybe lower middle class, but a middle class life, you know. Maybe it didn't sound like that based on how I described it, but, you know, the community was solid. There were black businesses, you know, that thrived. There was a Greek grocery store, Pete and Angelo's, you know, but Pete and Angelo were accepted members of the community, even though they didn't live within the community. They, you know, they did certain things that helped people get by, you know, like they allow people to have bills, you know, they would run in, they would have accounts where they could, you know, buy food and then pay later. You know, I even worked there for a little while, you know, as a delivery boy. So, you know, so they provided employment. You know, I don't remember the lady's name who worked there as a cashier, but she was a real sweet lady. Doggone, I would know her if I saw her in the street. You know, and it was the other guy, Johnny, who was like a fixture in the store, brother. You know, Johnny even had, you know, his due. You could always tell it was in between payday because his due would be raggedy as hell. But payday, well, he had it tight. You know, it was just the kind of things that, you know, we enjoy growing up or we just experienced growing up. You know, but, you know, at the same time, you know, this respect thing was strong, was a real part of how it was when I grew up. And you heard Butch make reference to my mom, you know, and it was with, you know, his grandparents, you know, it was that way with all of the parents. I mean, as a matter of fact, no matter what we might be doing, no matter how we might be talking, no matter how we may be behaving, whenever there was any parent, sometimes any adult, but always whenever there was any parent that was anywhere near, you know, where we were carrying on, we would immediately snap to, you know, change our behavior. Right later today, you know, got out of earshot or eye view, and then we may go back, but it was none of that carrying on you know, while they were around. We even, you know, like I probably was the first one to start smoking, you know, but, it, you know, and I was, you know, brag about it or show off in front of my friends. But there was no carrying on like that any time a parent showed up, you know. Matter of fact, my mother would have pinned my ears back if she had known I was smoking in public. She did allow me to smoke in the house. There would be financial challenges all too often for extended family, for the extended family system. And also, like a privacy, probably the greatest challenge, you know, especially for the elderly living in an extended family system, you know, where the privacy would be a rare commodity. And for somebody, like take myself for an example, like I'm 75, and if I have lived at a time of raising my own family, if I had lived at a time of, you know, being a bachelor, divorced bachelor, if I had lived at a time where I was living independently, and then to live in an extended family system, there are several themes and dynamics that there's no guarantee would be in place. Like, you know, where certain parts of my family, the value of respect would be inherent. That didn't necessarily work if I was living with a family that didn't know me, and therefore I didn't really have much influence on how they were raised. And if they weren't raised in a way that respect did not extend beyond their home, you know, I was almost like an interloper. You know, I was like, yeah, it's all right, you know, but don't be thinking you're going to come in here and be, you know, writing any rules or enforcing any discipline, you know, like we'll tolerate you, dude, but don't unpack your luggage. You know, anyway, so that's about as far as I'm going to go tonight with these themes. That's about as much time as we really have anyway. I know usually that all too often we go into overtime, but I would rather just stop now, hold on to this extended family right here, number three. Like I said, Wednesday we'll pick back up on it, maybe even reflect a little bit more on the first three. Again, the nuclear family, the single parent, and the extended family. Wednesday we'll talk more about the childless family. Yeah, that's a family. The step family, the grandparent family, and the grandparent family you heard Butch talking about, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Bailey, you know, raised the two boys, you know, at least that's what we saw. We don't know what it was like, you know, early on or later on. All I know is that for as long as I knew Butch and Ricky, you know, his grandparents were in charge, you know, and then the black family. And I want to spend some time on talking about that. So I want to thank you all for tuning in. I want to thank you, Butch, man, for hitting us up tonight. I think I see Will in the chat room. Wow, man, I wish he had, well, okay. Yeah, okay, loving the show, made it back to the crib. Looking forward to Wednesday. All right, man, my man. Thank you all for your prayers. He made it back from the wilderness. He is no longer on consignment. He will come in Wednesday fresh with his report of his tour since, what, last Monday until today, you know, which had to do not just with coming to Dallas, you know, Memphis twice, checking out B.B. King's Blues. You know, anyway, let me shut up and leave it to him to give his report. Man, I'm looking forward to hearing that. And of course, you know, Will is the kind of guy that wherever he shows up, everybody's glad he's there. You know, well, they're glad he came. So I want to thank you all for tuning in. I want to thank all of you for the support you showed me over these last and patience that you showed me for these past three shows. You know, it's been a trip, but I tell you, you know, I will have no problem relinquishing control back to the normalcy of having, you know, my son, my EP, and my dear friend, you know, heck, in many ways, my best friend, you know, back holding the reins. So, y'all, I wish you love and peace. And so, you know, I know that sounds so corny. And until next time, until Wednesday, I'm taking my time because I'm trying to find the song. I can't find it. I know it's there somewhere to close out the show. So until Wednesday once again, this is Bill And somewhere out there is Will. And until next time, y'all, take care.
Why I'm feeling this way, I guess I should be crying, but my heart just won't obey. If you stay, you'll be happy as I lie here on the rooftop in the rain. I say, made me who I am.